Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
So welcome back down to the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Rick Shields. I'm here with producer Guy, a married man now.
Yes.
Congratulations, Guy.
Thank you very much.
This episode is a bonus extra Break 75 episode.
Treat.
A little treat for everybody listening. Everybody that's in the clubhouse, everybody that follows on the Facebook page. I feel like we just want to get back into the swing of things, start recording some new podcasts. We've had some great ones in the past few weeks. Tubes and Ange was a really successful one.
Yeah.
Minwoo Lee, fantastic podcast, considering that was his first ever podcast. Next week, we'll be back to normal service every single Tuesday. Make sure you check it out on Apple, Spotify. Also, do check out the full version if you want to watch it on the second channel.
Can I show a little bit of housekeeping first off, though?
Love you too.
This is something that really, really, really annoys me. So obviously, I was away on honeymoon last week.
Very nice.
We had to stay UK-based due to all the COVID rules, which is fair enough. Went to Cornwall, and it was really nice. Weather was awesome. But there was one thing that ruined it for me, Rick.
Can I guess?
Go on.
Apple Podcast.
Apple Podcast. Borderline ruined my honeymoon. Because, and some people listen to this who don't listen to Apple, you're fine. Don't worry about it. If you're a Spotify listener, Amazon, YouTube, you're good.
You are cruising down the freeway to a one-way ticket to Podcastville.
Oh, yeah.
Like you're that. Fine.
Yeah. Aircon on, window down a little bit, tunes blasting, sunglasses, you're chilling.
Just give some sympathy for those Apple Podcast listeners.
If you're an Apple Podcast listener, and not every listener, which is borderline more annoying, some probably 50% of Apple Podcast listeners are thinking, what are these guys talking about? It's there for me every Tuesday morning, fine.
They're almost on the toll road.
They're just chilling as well, aren't they?
They are not cruising away. But
ironically, the roads in Cornwall are very similar to the experience that some Apple podcasts are having. Tight, windy, can't fit two cars. You have to awkwardly pull over into a little horrible lay-by and worry about you scratching your car.
Bumpy,
stressful, you get too hot, even though the windows are down, irk on your armpits are sweating. Just really horrible experience. Because there's been a problem with one of the latest Apple iOS software updates where, for some reason, not just our podcast, but loads of podcasts aren't refreshing. So you'll go on a Tuesday looking for the new podcast. It's not there. Wednesday, it's not there. It might turn up randomly on a Thursday. This week's took 1 week for it to come onto mine.
Ridiculous.
So if you are an Apple podcast listener and you're having this issue, you're not alone. It's not just our podcast. There's others. And I'm hoping that there'll be a software update very soon that will resolve it. I even Googled it and ended up on an Apple forum, and there's loads of people having the same issue with all sorts of podcasts. So, yeah, I just want to get out of the way.
As a backup for people listening, if you are having that issue, it might be worth downloading Spotify.
Yes.
It's still free to listen to on Spotify. And as I mentioned, you can now watch and listen to the whole episode every single week on the second channel, the Rick Shields Golf Show YouTube channel.
Well, I had a bit of telling off, actually, because people can now watch us, not just listen to us. A lot of people were commenting on how much I was messing with the mic.
My hands are purposely not going to touch it today.
Have you been in it as well?
Yeah. I think you were worse, but yeah, I caught myself doing it.
You know what it is? We've got these new microphone stands, and I watched some other podcasts on YouTube, and I saw loads of the podcast people like messing with it. And I thought, what is it they're doing? I'm doing it as we speak. What is it? And basically, it's like two little spinny things that tighten the mic. And they're perfectly tight, don't need tightening. But it's like when you're talking, it's quite therapeutic. So today, hands are on the table, firmly away from the mic. And if anyone sees me do it again, feel free to comment and slag me off till the cows come home.
Yes. Break 75.
Yes.
Well, let's almost kind of summarize it at the moment.
Okay.
So far, we have done 11 episodes.
Yeah.
The 12th one is coming next week. Now, that was always the plan. We wanted to do 12 episodes going around different golf courses here in the UK. And the premise is very simple. Can I shoot 75? We wanted to put a really cool video together. Harry, who's been doing all of the Break 75 edits, has done an amazing job. So big shout out to Harry. Matt's been helping with the filming, as well as Harry filming at all the Break 75s. You've been on every single one.
Yes.
You've played in three?
Three.
We've had other fantastic guests. We've played some amazing golf courses, some that I've done very well at, mm-hmm. some that I've comfortably broke 75, some historic golf courses, such as St. Andrews, where I broke 75, played amazing at King's Barnes. Sometimes I've had a few shockers.
Mm-hmm.
St. Anne's Old Links, which was really tough. The weather conditions weren't in my favour and I just got a bit unlucky and had a terrible round. And then JCB, the monster off the back tees. That was also a real kick in the teeth.
Well, just briefly on 75, I know we've mentioned this before in one of the podcasts, but we came up with this idea, and it was actually mid-January. I've got an email here when we were chatting about it with the lads of how we saw the whole thing looking. And it was really for two reasons. It was firstly to get out playing more golf. Because although, again, a lot of people think that you play golf a lot, you actually don't. You hit a lot of golf balls in certain situations, but you don't play that much golf.
This is the most golf I've played in a stretch of 12 weeks.
Oh.
Probably ever.
Yeah, it will be. A different golf course is playing properly with a scorecard.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing. And then we also wanted to try and make these videos a bit different. Because obviously, kind of, traditional golf course vlogs have been on YouTube now since years. And a lot of people like them. They're kind of long form. There's dialogue, there's banter, there's chat, etc. But we wanted to try and keep that in it a little bit and obviously keep them fun. We'll get all 18 holes in, every single shot, show off the golf courses, show off some of the guests, and make it kind of quite bingeable.
Yeah.
Because now there's 11, as you said, there will be 12 very soon. People have been loving them every week, and we've seen people saying they set alarms at 4 o'clock every week in the UK or whatever to watch them. But also, we want people to find this in 2 years' time and just watch four in a night or three in a night. And I think from the reception, that's been the case. People have really enjoyed them, haven't they?
Yeah, I think the reception has been incredible, to be honest, because we've had fun with the edits as well. We've experimented with different
things.
Birdie sauce, the infamous birdie sauce now. The things like the, when I had that mad par run through King's Barnes with like the Mario effects and things like that. The shot traces that we've had, but we've experimented with different ones. The music, the cutting, the rewinding, the stats that go through it all. The length of the videos as well. Like, yes. That was something we really wanted to nail down. We wanted people to watch it, enjoy every single second of it, right till the last putt drops, and are gutted that it's over. Mm. Like, they can't wait for the next episode. And I feel like we've done a really good job of that as well.
I think what I like about it is, obviously, you know, you've built up this massive audience, and we're really fortunate to have a huge audience. And we always try and make great videos. And sometimes we make videos that do well, like, in terms of views, very well. But you look at them and think, other people could do that video. We might have had the best idea or whatever. But with these, I do think, like, without being kind of, well, I am being biased and stuff, but I do think these do stand out as being some of the best videos on YouTube in terms of, like, the videography, yes, but also just everything about them. I am really happy with the kind of product, if you like. And the good news is there's one more left.
Yes, next Friday.
There's possibly more. We might just sprinkle a little bit of secret salt and just tell people what the plans we've got.
Yeah, so the original idea was 12 episodes, and that's what we're going to stick to. The first season, are we calling it a season or series?
Season's very American. Yeah. Series is more English, so I'll let you choose.
Let's go series.
Okay.
So series one, 12 episodes, that's going to be finishing soon. That is it for 2021 Break 75. But as Guy mentioned, we've got a couple of ideas, little sneaky extra Break 75 episodes that will be coming in the next few weeks/months. And then it stops. And then it potentially starts again season two next year, series two next year.
Should we give any little sprinkles on one of what those ideas is or not?
One of the ideas is a twist on a previous very, very successful series I've done in the past as well.
Yes.
So that's all I'm going to say at the moment.
Okay.
I feel like the golf courses we've played, some have been really challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Some have been kind of somewhat easier, ones that I've maybe known a bit more. The ones that I've found more challenging are the ones that I've never played ever before, to be honest. Barking's Barnes.
So which would you say was the hardest then?
Hardest for a number of reasons. One, because I've never played it before. Two, because of the length. Three, because of the experience and almost in the... I was in awe of the place, was what you and me played at JCB.
Yes, that was solid.
That was the hardest one. Even though the weather wasn't that hard that day, it could have been harder.
It was long.
It was super long.
It was... And I don't think you were playing your best either. So this sounds so obvious, but if you go to a golf course and don't play well, it's obviously a lot harder.
Yeah, you're going to get punished.
Birkdale was tough as well.
Yeah.
And if you hit it quite well around Birkdale, but if you were spraying it around there, you would have shot a million. So... Yeah. It's often how hard the golf course is, obviously, but also how well you play at said golf course.
Of course.
Makes a big difference.
My favourite course so far.
I need to get them up on YouTube so I don't forget any.
My favourite course that I've played so far in the series, I would possibly say King's Barnes.
The most stunning. And you played well. Does that change things though when you play well at a golf course? You like it more?
It does, but I'd also say maybe second or third best golf course I played at was JCB. So then, no, it doesn't. I still remember what the golf course is about. For me, King's Barnes, it was the company, it was the golf course, it was the scenery, it's how I played. It was the whole experience being up in Scotland, the home of golf. We played. We had a really special day the day before playing, obviously, the old course with your family. We had a really nice meal that night. Next day, we went and played King's Barnes, very relaxed atmosphere. I wasn't the best golfer in the group by a long way, which is great.
You're the fourth best.
I was the fourth best. We also had some really exciting things the next day. So we did the St. Andrews in reverse video.
Which will be out now, yeah.
Yeah, so that'll be out, which was mega. So I had that coming up. And I also knew that I had the break 75 at St. Andrews the next day. So I was just in golf mode, away from the family. That helped.
Yes.
A bit more chilled, a bit more relaxed. Didn't have to do a school run or whatever in the morning. That definitely helps. So that's probably my most stunning one.
You know what was my, what's the word I'm looking for?
Surprise?
So surprise golf course was Stockport. I thought Stockport was, because it's quite local, very local to us. It's probably 20 minutes, half an hour away. And weirdly, for us, when we go filming, when we're at a golf course that is close to home, it doesn't feel like as much a day out, obviously. Like when we went to Celtic Man, it was like a three-hour trip there, three-hour trip back. It felt like a proper day out. And obviously, you know, when we went to St. Andrews as well, goes without saying. But Stockport was like, we got there early in the morning. I knew it would be decent, but that really impressed me, that golf course.
Yeah, it was really nice.
Definitely
really
hidden
well
gem.
Manicured. It was obviously a beautiful day, and it wasn't supposed to be a beautiful day. Played with Hannah, who was great on the video, great company as well. So it's like, it was a really nice blend of everything, really. And we played some solid golf as well.
And then one thing we're going to come on to, and not just yet, but later on in the podcast, is you have now got a handicap.
I have now got an actual handicap.
So you're 14.
I'm going to be a deadly partner in the doubles next year with someone.
You will be. No, but we're going to come on to that in a minute. But then I think first off, one of the things you said was obviously you're going to play more golf, which you've clearly done. I think I've learned a lot about your golf game, and I think you've probably obviously learned loads. I think one of the things that I've, well, how do I word it? I think because you get a lot of, obviously, clubs sent to try and stuff, obviously, to review, it's quite easy to put a new club in the bag and just think, oh, I'll put a new club in the bag for the sake of it. And I think a lot of people would do the same, and I've done it before. We've put stuff in the bag for no reason other than it's a new club, why not?
It's shiny.
Yeah, exactly. But then when you've got a scorecard in your hand, which you don't do very often until recently, and I don't do very often, and you get onto hole 16 with a good score going, and you're hitting a 3-wood, do you want that shiny new 3-wood, or do you want that one that you know and you trust?
Yeah.
And I think, although you have swapped clubs throughout this series for certain reasons, again, we'll come on to, I think it's really shown to me, and I'm sure to you, that actually how important it is to use stuff that you actually trust.
And that's been a big thing. I feel like I've learned about my equipment much more.
Yeah.
I've learned about what I like a lot more actually playing golf. You know, yes, this driver might go further. This driver might be better looking. But actually, stood there with a driver that gives you confidence that actually you can stand there and go, okay, this driver's going to help me.
Yeah.
This driver, it might not be the longest in the world, but I know I can hit it pretty far still, but it's going to go down there.
Well, that's it, because GC Quad, as we know, and driving ranges are so different to the golf course. And if I give you a super low spinning Titleist TS4 now on the GC Quad, you might hit one that is longer. I think you actually did when you tried it out, the longest shot of the year, 300 and however many yards long. And that'll be 1 in 10. And it is easy to delete those down and go, look at that, and maybe even, you know, tell someone about it, whatever it might be. Or if you went for a driver fitting yourself as a you know, an amateur golfer or something, someone listening, you know, I tried out the TaylorMade, whatever, and I got one that went 300 yards. What did the rest of them do? And like, when you get on the golf course, obviously, I know people know this, but certainly some of these golf courses, like your JCBs, your Birkdales, obviously, massively, where the rough is so long, hitting the fairway is so important, and you need to have a product in the bag that you can hit well.
And that you trust, and that you can stand there and go, I know this is going to help me in some capacity. I did that with the putters as well through the series. I've had 3 putters through the series, but again, I've settled on a putter that I like the look of. It gives me confidence. It makes me feel good. Even the development, the happy accident that happened where I snapped my 2-iron at JCB and ended up putting a 3-iron in the bag, that's been game changing for me. I really do think that, because I've now got a much better gap in my 3-wood. I'm hitting outrageously more often.
And you're ripping it.
I know, and I love it again. And I shied away from using it because it was almost redundant a little bit in my bag because of my 2-iron. And then because I didn't use it very often, I didn't have much trust or faith in it. But now I've got 3-iron, which sits in a lot nicer. I pull my 3-wood out way more. And the more I've hit it, the more I've become confident with it. And I'm loving that.
That was a big change. Because also as well, I felt when you had 2-iron, 4-iron, there was quite a lot of holes where you need a 3-iron.
Yeah.
And you either try and smash a 4-iron, which doesn't often work very well, or go easy on a 2-iron, which again is a hard shot to play. So that was a good addition. Swapping your driver as well was a slight tweak, but I think that was a good change.
I stole yours at Scotland.
Why did you use mine?
I played the day before at St Andrews with the LS Tech, and it was so hard, the conditions.
Yeah.
And I just thought that morning, I'm not quite with it with my driver.
Gain 5 yards occasionally, but you're going to miss more fairways.
I just felt like going around King's Barnes that Saturday after playing the really tough conditions in the St Andrews with you, which to a lot of people again watching, we didn't film that video. So nobody saw that. That was just a nice little kind of relaxing round of golf that we had. But my driver had lost confidence because of probably the conditions were so hard. So because Guy wasn't playing the next day and he's got the max in his driver, the G4 25 Max, I was like, let me just borrow your drive ahead. And I loved it. And ever since, I put my own one in, my own bag, and loved it ever since.
I don't think you lose anything. You might literally lose 4 yards if you smash them both, 4 or 5 yards.
It's nothing, is it?
It's nothing. And the only thing, it's a little bit louder, or it feels louder.
Yeah, I don't know if louder.
It does feel like it's louder, but it's not like a horrendous noise. And I think once you got used to that after, which you did after a few holes, that was a really good change. Anything else that you changed? I can't remember.
That's it. I want to ask a question.
Go on.
If you were to rank my sections of golf game in order of best to worst, would you be able to do that?
Yes.
Okay. What's the best part of my game?
I would say your best part of the game has been driving.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
I would agree.
I think you've been pretty long.
Yeah.
You've been straight.
My misses haven't been that bad.
No. And I think compared to possibly last year, year before, when you did play any golf or when we played or you were even just reviewing a driver, your misses aren't as bad. You still got a left one in the locker occasionally, which you probably always will have, which is, you know, fine. But you could have some horrendous lefts. I think that's been ironed out massively, so that's been really good.
There was a couple of rounds. Celtic Manor, I drove the ball outrageously good.
Yeah.
King's Barnes, I drove it outrageously good.
You did.
And the rest of them are just okay. I never feel like I've had a bad driving day.
So that's top.
Yeah, I think so.
I think your irons have been pretty solid.
Yeah.
I'd say they're probably in at number two.
Yeah. When I stand up to a par three, I never feel like I'm not going to hit the green.
Yeah.
Like, and it doesn't really matter what length iron it is either. It would actually be quite interesting. I'm probably not as geeky on this, but maybe somebody listening could be really geeky and go
stat
through
it all out.
Like proper dive into
that would be
the
interesting, because what we might be saying now might end up being wrong, but that's how it feels when you're there in the situation.
I mean, maybe we could look into that, but it's a lot. I mean, all the evidence is there if somebody wants to go through it all and do all the strokes gained and
that
all
would
this
be class. I don't really understand strokes gained massively, I'll be honest, but
it would be really interesting to find out.
I think your putting has been probably next. I think it's been hot and cold, to be honest with you. But when it's hot, it is hot. Yeah. Where was it where you couldn't, was that
King's Barnes? I hold a lot of really good putts.
But then, when was it the other day? You said, I can't miss. Was it Birkdale?
Yeah.
You had a few good putts. I don't think I can miss this, and you rolled it quite well. So I think you've had some other days at Celtic Manor where you miss loads.
Everything.
Like stupidly short ones you were just
loads
missing.
Loads of 3-putts and all sorts.
Was that with the old even roll as well, though?
Yeah, I went back to the even roll.
I think that new Odyssey's been, well, the old Odyssey that you now got new in the bag has been a good change. So your putting's been hot and cold. Your pitching's been pretty poor, which obviously you know about, and you're chipping.
Yeah.
And what you've started to do now, which obviously is good in some ways, is you're doing a lot more putting off the green.
Yeah.
And it's therefore made your bad putt still okay. You know, you're not going to, whereas you might fat a chip or scull it through the green, you're not going to hit that bad of a putt. However, I do think it has still cost you.
I think it's massively cost me this series.
Because you might be on, like, certainly the link course, where putting is a bit more. I mean, you did obviously the 18 at St Andrews, you put it off the green and put it well close. That was ridiculous.
But
there's a lot of times when that's not the shot. Even if you put it within 10 foot, you're kind of thinking, well, at least didn't thin it through the green. But then are you going to hold a 10-footer? Sometimes you will, sometimes you won't. You've got a little bit more confidence on your chips and get it within 6 foot, 5 foot more often, I do think you'd end up shooting better scores. That's something that you need to address, but you've kind of tried. It's just confidence,
I think there's a couple of things. I'm surprised I've not changed my wedges yet, mm-hmm. if I'm honest. I don't know why I've not done that yet. I've probably not settled on wedges that I really, really want to move into. So I want to change my lofting. I want to go to a 50 degree, a 54 and a 58. I probably want to go slightly wider soled wedges to give me a bit more support underneath the ball. And then, like you said, like remember when before we played at Birkdale, we went on that mega chipping green.
Yes, that was awesome, that chipping green.
Some of the shots weren't great, but some of the shots I played were just outrageously good.
Because you were trying something a bit different, with you kind of opening your body up a bit more, but there was no consequence.
No.
You could, if you thinned one, thin it.
Yeah,
there was that one shot you hit, which I know we can't really explain properly, but it was a ridiculous golf shot. It was confidence.
Yeah, it was. And then if I can build on that. So if there's any part of my game, and I would agree exactly what you've described it there, I would almost rank it almost exactly the same. For me, if I could put more effort, guidance, work, if I could become unbelievable from 100 yards and in, my scores could come a lot lower. Yeah. I honestly believe that.
I think what also is weird with your game is you're very much a confidence player.
Huge.
If you used to off par, birdie, par, you're not doing much worse than a 75,
yeah.
I feel like, because it's in your head, you've got a nice little start going. But also, what's mad is, like, if we went to the golf course, I mean, jokes aside, you do beat me most times you play, but we have a few rounds, it's pretty close, whatever. If we went out and played now, I feel like your bad round could be bad, but you've also got you can go quite under par if everything's going well.
Mm.
So that's why we'll come to your handicap in a minute. It's interesting what you've been given.
Yes.
But I do think if you can get a little bit more confidence or maybe not have more confidence after a bad start.
Yeah.
I also sometimes think of it a few times, you might get to hole 14 and get a bit carried away and it sometimes goes to pot a little bit. But overall, I think you've played some good golf.
I think one thing that I'm never scared about when I'm having a good round going, I actually never think I'm going to have a bad round. But I try and push too much to have a great round.
Yes.
Like, so many times I was like level par around the 14th. And instead of maybe still being patient, it's then when I go, right, let's see if I can make some birdies.
Yeah.
And I try and push on the accelerator, which is actually quite a nice feeling because I must have confidence in my game if I feel like I can do that. But maybe my confidence and my ability don't quite match up yet because as much as I want to push on the accelerator, sometimes I just can't force those birdies when I need them.
Yeah,
it'd be an amazing position, and I've done this a few times going back years ago when I used to do Quest for the Open. If I can get under par, I was never scared of going more under par. Like I felt like I could push. If I had a good round together, I never felt like I was going to suddenly make a double or a triple to ruin that scorecard, which is mad.
I feel like if you remember at my golf club, right? And it was a club championships, and you went out at 10 o'clock in the morning, I was at 11. When I came in, I would think you could have either had a 82 or a 69.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
That's
where your golf's at, which, to be fair, is quite good because 69s, you need to be winning tournaments. There's no point going out shooting 75 because that's not going to win.
Would I swap it, though, for being that player who pretty much always shoots one or two over par? Or whatever it may be, four over par, let's say.
I don't think you would. Because those type of golfers aren't always that good to watch. They just kind of get it round, which is good to know that you're going to go to a golf course and not shoot a horrendous score. But would it be fun for you?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
I feel like certainly from that 100 yards and in, because like I say, I'm decent off the tee. If I could nail those wedgie shots and give myself four or five proper better opportunities for birdie, because sometimes I'm hitting wedge shots to 20 feet and they're not going to drop all the time, are they, ever? Where if I was sticking them into less than 10 feet and rolling a few more of those in, if I had that bad start, I could probably think, well, it's all right, I'm probably going to make five birdies this round of golf. Where I have to get off to a good start to think I'm going to make five birdies in a round of golf.
Okay then, so before we get into handicap, you've obviously played a lot of golf and you've learned about your game. Is there anything that you think from playing more golf, obviously as a golf coach as well, that stood out that you would say to listeners that's going to help them play better golf when they've got a scorecard in the hand? Or is it just down to each individual? Is there anything you've taken away from this 12 weeks where you think, you know what, from not playing so much, I almost forgot that. I forgot that feeling. But from playing again, I've remembered X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
Go on.
Managing emotions. And being much more in game mode when you're playing golf. Like I feel like now, because of the evolution of driving ranges and launch monitors and home launch monitors that people have, sometimes they'll try and take that way of playing golf,
yeah,
which is not real, it's an artificial way of playing golf, and trying to implement it out on a golf course. And that's not golf. Golf is played on a golf course where the conditions are different every single day. The shots that you've got to try and hit are different every day. As you mentioned before, there's consequences. Some holes, there's trouble down the right. There's trouble down the left. There's water to carry. It's interwind, downwind. You're on a hill. Like, all of those things, as golfers, I think now in the new world of practice, is getting overlooked. Mm. Like, I would much more, if I was now proper playing now, I said, right, I'm going to stop all this YouTube podcast and everything else. I'm going to play all the time. I would be out on the golf course a lot more than I would be just shelling golf balls.
Yeah,
I feel like that it's not real. Like, and that's something I've really recognized, because a lot in this time, and I was chatting to Matt about it yesterday when we were doing some filming, I've not spent loads of time beating balls in this 12-week period. I've spent a bit more time on the golf courses or whatever it may be. That's how I feel like you get better at golf.
Yeah.
Being out on a golf course and playing golf and different lies and different situations. And another thing that's absolutely...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Crazy. If we look at this 12-week window that we've been playing loads of golf, and that's 3 months, how much the weather conditions have changed.
Yeah.
From like early in the season when it was cold, it was wet, it was damp.
The first one at St Anzo Links was
first
horrendous.
One at Marriott.
Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
Second one, but like the weather compared to now, like at Birkdale last week, where the ball is bounding and bouncing down the fairways till, you know, as long as you're hitting it straight, it's like a runway.
Yeah.
Like those conditions, the TV's just gone off. Those conditions are so different, aren't they, compared to, you know, like say March. And I think that's something as golfers, again, we might overlook a little bit too much.
Yeah, no, that's good. You know what? I only obviously played 3 of the courses, but I was lucky that they were great courses. I played, obviously, Prestbury, really good course. I'd never played before. JCB, which destroyed me. And then obviously Birkdale. Did play St Andrews, but obviously that wasn't kind of one of them as such. What opened my eyes is, obviously now with Handicap Index, your handicap changes on different golf courses, which is good because it means you can kind of have a more of a realistic target or goal, whatever you want to shoot. But what really opened my eyes is that your handicap typically for most people is based around one golf course where you know what club to hit, you know what way the wind typically goes, you know the breaks, the greens, you know where the misses are, not to miss. From playing different golf courses, which I've not been doing as much until recently, you have to just change your expectations. So for me, again, handicap isn't official anymore. It has lapsed, but it was 4. I'm not really playing to 4 because I'm not playing enough golf. But also what I did, which I think helped me, certainly at Birkdale and at St Andrews, was don't almost forget that that's your handicap and give yourself another handicap. And so I kind of thought, well, I want to try and break 9 over. If I can do that, or in the 70s, I'm going to be well happy. And by having that little bit of a different expectation, it definitely helped me enjoy the game more, because obviously you want to go and enjoy it, but you know, you're fortunate in that. I don't think we paid for any green fees at these golf courses, did we?
No.
For most people, if you're going to play another golf course, you're paying a green fee. So there comes a balance. If you want to go and enjoy it, but you also want to play well. But if you go to a birthday, let's just say, and you pay £200, £250, whatever it is for a green fee, and you go double bogey, like I did, it could be quite easy to go, oh my, why have I bothered with this? Yeah. But you have to just almost give yourself a different goal, whether it might be, right, okay, well, that's done. Next 16 holes, I'm going to play to my handicap, yeah, or whatever it might be. Or
I'm going to try and make three pars in this round of golf, exactly, or whatever it may be.
And that's one thing we did at St Andrews. Again, that wasn't a 75, but it kind of felt like it was a bit, because we kept our score and stuff. But I think I had seven bogeys in a row, but the weather was that bad. I literally thought, well, bogeys are pars today.
Your objective became not making a double.
Yeah, exactly. Not make a double and almost see pars as birdies. And in the end, I think, well, they had nine over, which I was quite happy with.
It was really good. You played so well, and well around there.
And if that was not the people... I had nine over, 81.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Not the people necessarily want my advice, but that was the only thing I would say. If you are paying to go to other golf courses, just have a different expectation. Yeah. Look at what your handicap should be, your handicap index, and that might change. But also, give yourself a bit of three or four shot leeway. We've also got an apology to make, Rick. I'm going to let you just... ponder for a minute of what this might be.
To Josh?
No, not to Josh. Just scrap that out. No, keep that in. No, know what it is?
I don't.
So, obviously, the previous podcast we had was sponsored by Motor Caddy, and we had the Dear Rick section.
Yes.
One of them was from a guy, I don't know if he was anonymous not, but I'm going to say it now. His name was Ethan O'Neill, and if you listen to the podcast all the time, if you're in the clubhouse, you'll know this email. It was about a young lad who is very fortunate that his granddad is a member at Royal Birkdale.
Yeah, I bet people would remember that now. Yes. You've said it.
And he was having a bit of a, how do I say, moan or whinge? It was neither of those. It was just a bit of a, he was asking our opinion on the fact that he's been playing golf for 18 months, plays with his mates at his local track and kind of plays okay, goes to Birkdale with his granddad, who even pays for him to play, and he plays that bad, he's starting to not enjoy it. And we said at the time,
How can
you not enjoy it?
How can that even be a thing?
Yeah, we said you need to make sure that you enjoy it. Because he said here, he plays at a local golf course in Liverpool and shoots about 83. So yeah. He's happy with that. At Birkdale, it's 100 plus.
It is. And we can see that now.
100%. And we were saying to him, well, forget that. You know, you're playing Birkdale for free. Enjoy it, embrace it, forget what you score. After, I think it was three holes at Birkdale, I turned to you and said, do you remember that email? And you went, yeah. I said, I think I changed my advice now. Because it's very, very, very hard.
Very hard.
If you went as a one-off with a friend and you paid that top green fee, you might just treat it as an experience that, look, I'm playing an open course, I'm going to enjoy it no matter what I shoot, and that's a good mindset. But if you are fortunate like Ethan and you're playing it quite often, I can honestly understand now why that golf course would start to just destroy you, because the novelty would wear off.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely solid.
And it's one of those courses that, if he shoots an 83 around his local course in Liverpool, and it might be quite open, mm-hmm, and he might hit it a long way and smash it out there or whatever, and kind of get away with it because the rough isn't that bad or there's not that tree lined, and he enjoys that golf. That's great golf. You cannot, and we mean this, as you probably saw from the video, you cannot hit it 5 yards offline at Royal Birkdale. Your golf ball is lost.
Even on par threes.
It's ridiculous, the rough.
Was it hole 14? I went that line, I ended up getting up and down, which is really happy. But I think I even might have hit the side of the green and bounced off. And it was like knee-high rough, where you're either not finding your ball, or if you do find it, it's horrendously tough. And you might get up and down occasionally, but more often than not, you're getting destroyed.
Well, we walked around with Harry and Matt, our camera guys, and they're off. What are you off now, Matt?
12?
They said they wouldn't be able to play his golf course because it's not a golf course that you can literally play, because just the rough and anything offline, as we mentioned, it's like being out of bounds.
Yeah. The only, again, I know I use running analogies a lot and it's a bit silly, but like I've got a 5K PB on a treadmill, right? Which is flat, and you just do the speed that it's doing, and you just, as long as you don't fall off, you can do a certain time. You can't do that and expect to do the same 5K time running up a mountain. Yeah. You wouldn't do, obviously, would you? And that's like with golf. If you shoot 83 at your home track, which is quite easy, or you know, and then you're to Birkdale, you're not going to shoot. You have to see it as a different game almost.
It almost doesn't matter what the course slope measurement is or anything, because it wouldn't allow you for that many shots.
Yeah.
It'd have to be 20 shots. Because certainly if you play that type of game that I'm talking about and you smash it a long way and kind of find it somewhere else, you wouldn't do that at Birkdale. It almost gives me a much deeper I think that's another thing that I really want to highlight. I think playing this much more golf and trying to record these scores and playing at these fantastic golf courses and sometimes playing off a much longer tee, for me, I think this year has been a big development of a greater appreciation to tour players.
100%.
Like an outrageously deeper like praise and acknowledgement of how unbelievable tour players are. And then you've even got that level above the like the top 50 in the world.
It is madness. Like most golf courses, you have either a junior or somebody who's off like scratch, who might win the club championship every year, who has the odd score under par, who compared to most golfers is unreal. And that's good, you know, very, very good standard. Then you have like the plus five guy, the plus four guy who might represent England occasionally and have won a few like local amateur things or whatever it might be, which completely another level, literally five shots per round better. Then you've got people like Minwoo Lee who would be off about plus eight.
I think in between that, you've even got your wannabe kind of journeymen,
yeah,
who are pros but play on like the local PGA stuff, like near us, who are fantastic golfers. Like, I know so many of them that are really, really good golfers, regularly shoot under par around local tracks around here. Yeah. And probably someone like a Pete Finch is kind of trying to get into that kind of world at the moment. Like, that's not even close to what we experienced playing with James Robinson. And James is I'm sure he doesn't mind us saying this, a failed tour pro. He wasn't good enough. Then you've got tour pros.
Well, this leads us, it's mad. This leads us very nicely onto the handicap bit, because this is where I think, even for us, some of the confusion comes from, because a scratch golfer is a zero handicap. So they get no shots on the golf course. So whatever they shoot, the gross and the net are the same score. When you turn pro, whether it be a PGA pro or obviously a playing professional, you then have no handicap. So you receive no shots off the golf course or anything like that. So therefore, it could be quite, you know, a simple mistake to think that a scratch golfer, a zero handicap golfer, and a pro are the same. And obviously they're not. You can also, as again, some people may or may not know, but to do a, you know, become a PGA professional like you are, you can turn pro for four handicap. I think that's the same in the US, I'm not sure. But in the UK, it's a four handicap. And that means that then you become a qualified PGA professional where you can go out and you can become a golf coach, you can become a fitter, you can have a business like a pro shop or a golf business, whatever that might be. But you could ultimately be a four handicap golf, which is still a very, very good level of golf, but it's not even a scratch handicap. And then obviously, as we said, the guys on tour don't have handicaps. Some actually, I think, do now, kind of unofficially at the home courses, where they're off like plus nine or whatever. But typically don't know what their handicap is. So you don't have a handicap as it stands. But let's talk about a bit more about this. You don't want to say where this came from. Introduce it a little bit.
So after all the break 75s we've done so far, I've put my scores into England Golf. And I now have been assigned a handicap. And it's really surprised me.
Okay.
So a bit of a backstory. When I was a junior golfer, I got down to single figures. Probably at 16 or so, I was off single figures when I went to college. As I turned probably to about 18, I probably was off about four or five handicap. And I needed to work quite hard. At 19, I turned professional. I did my PGA qualifications at 19. And as mentioned, to become a PGA pro, you have to be a four or less. I got my lowest amateur handicap down to three.
Can you remember the exact handicap?
3.4. Like, just in three, yeah. Right? I then turned professional. And when you turn professional, you have zero handicap. So I became a zero handicap player. I never really felt like I was a zero handicap player. Like, I wasn't a golfer that could shoot regularly under par. Very rare would I do that. When I played in tournaments, when I became a PGA pro, I shot four or five over par. That was my golf.
And that was quite, you're happy with that?
That was what I expected. Weirdly, my mindset changed, thinking I should overnight now start shooting level par, even though that's not, that, like, overnight, as soon as I turned pro, I thought, oh, I've turned pro now. That must now unlock the key to get me into level par golf or under par golf. Mm-hmm. Not true. So from 19 to current date now, over that time period, I've not had a handicap. So that's been 15 years of no... I've been a golf professional for 15 years now. Oh, that's scary.
It's a long time.
In that 15 years, I've played in some competitions. I've done okay-ish, not really competed in a massive amount of level. So right now, before, at the start of this year, we did a video talking about what my handicap would be roughly. In my head, from the golf that I play, I honestly believed I'm a 2-3 handicapper. Mm. And that's where the premise of Break 75 came from. We thought, if I can make a video where I can go around the golf course, and if I can break 75, which is typically on a par 72, it's 3 over par. If I can break 75, I'm playing to my handicap.
You'd be shooting 2 over par then to
2 over par.
Yeah.
That's where the whole idea came from. And the big idea with Break 75 was to almost let people know that I'm not going to shoot under par all the time. I'm not a tour player. Somewhere around the 70s, I'm happy with.
Do you think the PJ in your name, people think of PJ Tour and therefore like an elite golfer?
100%. Yeah, there's a definite misconception there. I know I'm good enough to play. I turned professional as a PJ Pro to coach and to make people play better. Had the skill, the ability. I could demonstrate shots if I needed to. I played a little bit, but again, that wasn't why I turned professional. I turned professional so it gave me the license so I could coach, charge money, earn money, make a living.
Just a quick one then. So when you did turn pro and your handicap just kind of vanished, but it was really like it was 3. When you then played like a scratch golfer, did you feel like you were the same as him, or do you still think they were kind of a bit better?
I never wanted to receive shots off a scratch handicapper, but in reality, I never probably won.
So you should have done, really.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Because what do I then say I am? Because again, as soon as you turn pro and you lose your handicap, there's no way of monitoring it. Like until now, this year, yeah, with the World Handicap System, there was no way of me putting an accurate measurement on this unless I literally tracked every single score I had in that 15-year period and almost did it myself.
And do you think 4 handicap is the right handicap to turn pro off, or do you think it should be lower or higher, or is it about right?
I think 4's good. Mm-hmm. If you're off scratch, you don't have to do a playing ability test.
Ah.
Scratch or better, you don't have to do a playing ability test. From 1, 2, 3, or 4, you have to do a playing ability test, which isn't ridiculously hard. It's 2 rounds of golf, and you've got to shoot under 15 over. So okay, 7 over each round basically gets you in.
Sounds easy on paper, but I bet if people are nervous
and you
get 182 in there,
yep,
you're suddenly thinking, this is going to be a tough ask.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So it just showed there's a level of skill there. And again, as we mentioned, the PGA is a pathway into so many different jobs.
Yeah.
Like doing the PGA qualification here in the UK and the USPGA in the USA, it allows you to be a club fitter, a professional golfer, a head pro at a golf club, a director of golf, yeah, whatever it may be. So you don't have to be scratch or better. You just have to have an awareness. So before this series, I thought I was off 3. So because I've been recording all my scores for the last 11 rounds, I'm going to put a little caveat on this because I've actually only been able to use 10 of the rounds. The JCB round that I had, which is weirdly my highest score.
Convenient.
Didn't count because the JCB isn't affiliated with England Golf. So it, you can't get a handicap there.
There's no slope rating and stuff like that.
So because it's a corporate membership facility.
Okay, makes
sense. So they don't have memberships there. So I submitted all my scores. And I'm just going to run through them very quickly so people can listen in. We'll just fire them on screen. Worsley Park was the first one that I did, 77, 5 over. St. Anne's Old Links was next one, 82, 12 over. Next one I did was Mia, 70, 1 under par. Next one I did was Prestbury, 73, 2 over par. Next one I did was Celtic Manor, 77, 5 over par. Stockport, 73, 2 over par. Hillside, 76, 4...
I think it's 4 over.
That's not 76. I actually shot 77. I wonder if the triple bogey turns into
it. Yeah, it does. That's what it does.
Yeah, I just looked at that then. So Hillside, I've got on this app now. I'm on the England Golf app. It's down as a 76, but I actually shot 77.
Yeah, that's why triple bogeys don't. It's net double bogey, is it? The worst you can have.
So the 7 turned into a 6. So that was 4 over. Kings Barnes, I shot 72, level par. Old Course St Andrews shot 73, 1 over par. And Royal Birkdale shot 77, 5 over par.
So you now have a handicap after all those rounds.
In my head, after watching and you watching all my golf,
yeah,
and me playing, after all the rounds of golf, what would you say my handicap is?
Well, I don't know what yours is. You've not shown me.
No, I've not shown you what my handicap is.
I would honestly say between 2 and 4. So I'd go 2.
You're a long way off. And that surprised me.
Higher or lower?
A lot lower. My handicap, my handicap now, after those 10 rounds of golf, drum roll please, is plus 1.2.
Oh,
I am a plus handicapper. Let me explain. So with the new World Handicap System, all the things like slope rating, course index, everything else has been factored into these measurements.
Right.
So even though, let's say I had a 73 around St. Andrew's Old Course, because of the difficulty of the golf course, that actually played as a plus 1.8, almost 2 under par gross. So for example, this is really interesting. When I had my 70 around Mia, so 1 under par, because of the difficulty level of the golf course, et cetera, it actually came out as 2.4 under par.
So you're 1 under gross, so essentially 2.5 under gross. Ah.
Now, this is where it's interesting. Even though I had some bad rounds, I had this 82 at St. Anne's Old Links, and I had a couple of high 70s. The way that the new handicap system works with my 10 handicaps, the three best scores count.
Okay.
And it's an average from those best three.
So you've got Mia.
70 at Mia, which played
2.4
under par. I had a 72 at King's Barnes, which played a 1.1 under par.
Right.
And I had a 73 at the old course, which plays 0.1 under par.
So it's plus, yeah.
So they've taken those scores into consideration. They've taken average of those three, and the average of those three is 1.2 handicap.
Plus
1.2.
You know
handicap.
What's mad? As shocked as I am, I always, a bit of a cliche, but I think it is true. People always say you should play to your handicap when you're playing well.
I've always said a handicap is a snapshot of you on a good day.
And that's, to be fair, you are, according, certainly now we know about the actual, how the essentially the par changes as well.
Yeah.
You are on a good day, about between level and one under.
I'm not going shooting 5 under par, so I'm not off plus 5. I can squeeze a 1 under par in every now and again, as we've seen. So that's kind of, that's me on a good day.
And what would you say was your worst score? How many over?
The worst score on the system, because the JCB one didn't count, was 12 over at St. Anne's Old Links.
So do you think that might give listeners some faith that if a plus 1 handicap golfer can shoot 12 over on a bad day, what would an 18 handicap shoot on a bad day?
This is really interesting, something I've just seen. That 12 over par at St. Anne's Old Links, because of the conditions, everything else, the measurements of the day, it actually came out as only 4.8 over par.
Oh, my dear. So they have the condition on the day on there as well?
Yeah, so they've got history of like competitions that have taken place that day or other scores that have taken place that day.
Oh, my word. That's
so
mad.
Even though I was 12 over gross, and we saw the conditions, it was horrendous.
It was.
Also, sorry, very quick one. Some of my scores around were quite big at St. Anne's Old Links.
So they got knocked down.
They would
have
been knocked down a little bit as well.
How does it feel to be a plus one handicap golfer?
It's pretty nice. Bit of flex. Like I say, after looking at the evidence, I can't argue with it, because that's kind of what I'm saying.
It does make sense.
It's me on a good day. And every now and again, I can shoot a one on the par. What it's made me consider is if I'm a plus 1.2 handicapper, okay, or I'm a less than scratch handicapper, honestly now, if you did handicap measurements of the best players in the world, a Dustin Johnson, around the golf courses that he plays at, in those conditions, what is someone like Dustin Johnson's handicap?
Literally, plus 12, plus 13.
Because they can shoot 10 under par.
And on a solid course, 7,500 yards.
So that,
with massive
that
rough.
10 under par could easily turn into a 13 under par because of the conditions. And again, if it's a snapshot of you on a good day, an average of your best rounds, I honestly believe, and this is why we see tour players at their local golf courses having plus 9 handicaps, etc. It just shows the levels. And if anybody for 1 second is thinking that, oh, Rick, you're not that good, I'm just going to put this into perspective. If I'm off plus 1.2, okay, and someone like a DJ is off plus 10, if we played 4 rounds of golf, he would be 40 shots minimum better than me.
Different. It's literally a different world and a different game. And although we talk about tour pros a lot and how good they are, it still doesn't sink in that if you are off plus 1, he's going to be, like you said, 35 to 40 shots better than you over a 4-day tournament.
So if we saw a leaderboard and he was 10 under par, I'd be 30 plus over par.
Sounds about right.
How mad is that?
It is ridiculous. But I think what I like from that is that it just shows that even, again, plus one handicapper, you can have good days, which you've got on there, out of that 10 or 11, whatever, but you can have some shocks as well. So just, you know, when, if you're an 18 handicap listening, a 10 handicap, a 30 handicap, whatever it might be, your handicap is on a good day, and you are going to have some days, unfortunately, we all are, where you're miles over your handicap, but yep, it happens, doesn't it?
So now, next season, next series, I think we've got break 69.
Carried away. But what you need to then do, in theory, if you want to do it that, would actually be find out what the course power was on the day.
Yeah.
You say it changes then. Yeah. So when you're trying to break 75, it might actually end up being break 78 that day because of the difficulty in the conditions, but that's not good for the title, is it?
Exactly. We could still call it break 75.
I'm expecting big things from you now.
This, and also, it's that moment when I turned pro and I think I unlocked a key that made me better. Suddenly, because I'm a plus one handicapper now, I feel like it's going to unlock the key to make me suddenly better at chipping and pitching.
I can't wait for you to shoot 85 next time we play golf.
So guys, thanks so much for listening to today's episode. Hopefully you enjoyed it. I feel like we dived into a lot of information there. The final break 75 is coming next Friday, and it's either one of two options, a very special venue or redemption episode. We'll find out next Friday.
Couple of quick things about the podcast. Next week, when it comes back on Tuesday, it's a normal Tuesday slot, we might be having a little bit of freshen up, might have a few little changes here and there. Obviously, it's been 18 months now since we started. This is going to be, this is episode 80, so next week will be 81.
Nice.
So we want some more emails, because if you remember when we had Tubes and Ange on last week, we said we were going to start some new features. We were going to have stupid golf rules. We've had quite a lot of good ones sent in. But if you've got an experience of either a golf rule on the golf course, where whatever it might be, in a divot or something, or ideally things where you've gone to a golf club and they've said, you've got to take those socks off. You've got to do, you know, the stupid, annoying rules that just don't make sense.
Yeah.
One that always gets me is you can't change your shoes in the car park. Yeah. We said that last time, but stuff like that. Email us those in. If you've got a nightmare golf story, a dear Rick, all that kind of good stuff, email us. Simple email, podcast@rickshields.com. Still get a lot of people asking us what the email is. It's literally podcast@rickshields.com. And then last thing, although we were slagging off Apple before, royally, saying how annoying Apple is, it's always nice to get some Apple feedback and five-star reviews. So I've not asked for ages, not been that bothered. But if you've enjoyed the podcast so far and you want to give us some feedback, we love emails, but we also love seeing those reviews on Apple. So if you use Apple, give us 5 stars and join the clubhouse.
We've basically been slipping down the ranking of the USA, and we want to get back up into top three at least.
Yeah, we've stopped asking for reviews. Reviews always help. And if you're not sure what the clubhouse is, most people are, you're in the clubhouse when, Rick? How do you enter the clubhouse, this mystical clubhouse?
You send a blank check to rshields at... you listen to every single episode.
Exactly.
That's it.
Yeah, when you're in, you're in.
And we might do some clubhouse merch.
I think we are. I think we should. And then also, don't forget,
if
you're in the clubhouse and you see Rick out and about, Rick class you as a friend. And certainly when we've got the merch out, if you see Rick out and about on a golf course or whatever it might be, and you've got your merch with you, he will buy you a soft beverage of your choice.
Yeah. Alcoholic or non-alcoholic. Okay. See what happens.
So Rick can have a quadruple vodka and coke.
I paid £5 for this hat. That hat's not going to be £5.
£5 million for this hat.
I paid £35 for this hat. I want a bottle of champagne.
Yeah, do it.
That's not legal tender. Guys, thanks for listening, everybody. Hopefully you enjoyed the episode. That was a nice little deep dive, a little bonus episode.
A little nugget.
Hopefully you enjoyed the vibes. And we'll see you next week at the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.